Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. And I am here, James Andrew Cox, again, bringing you another great interview today. I have Sasha, is it Moreau?
You got it. Moreau.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Yeah, because I always think that's, because Gambit from X-Men, he's Remy LeBeau. And I'm like, oh, that must be like a Cajun name, you know?
There you go. Yep.
So, yeah. So I'm here with Mr. Sasha Moreau. So he says, created chaos at the intersection of music and theater. Sasha is a self-styled punk rock Willy Wonka. That's great. he's an artist, a conjurer, a writer, and a musician. Sasha, welcome to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast.
Hey, it is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Now, I got to ask you about this punk rock Willy Wonka. I've never heard of that. You know, that's kind of unique.
So it, for the, where to even start? So I've been in the music industry professionally for just over 20 years. And a lot of that time has been spent playing in punk rock bands specifically. But my career has also paralleled in that I have done magic in Grand Stage Illusion professionally for about the same time, 20 years. So there has been a theatrical element to that, which is oftentimes lacking in, you know, punk rock is about getting together with your friends in the basement and with a whole group of community of people that just love the same thing and just going wild together. But there's not a lot of production value that happens. And so that's sort of what that thing is, a self-styled punk rock Willy Wonka. Was this kind of crazy visionary who was very theatrical about everything and was like to tinker and was, you know, innovate things. And that's how I like to see myself.
Yeah, man, that's one of the greatest movies of all time, you know. And I watched the new renditions of Wonka and like Wicked or Willy Wonka's not Wicked, but yeah, but I've never watched the one with Johnny Depp yet, so I don't know what that's like. You know,
I don't want to prejudice you. I will say that I much prefer the original.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I was I was a high school teacher for about 5 years of French and theater, and I ended up directing a version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory where I cast a female Willy Wonka, and it was actually phenomenal. And it followed the book by Roald Dahl very closely, as opposed to either of the movies. And we just had a total blast getting creative and doing a whole bunch of crazy weird stuff.
Now, I read in your bio, you have done under 1,000 shows under your belt, like touring and with your, but I think it's your band United Defiance is where you did all your 1,000 shows, which is a great band, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And you did some stint on Broadway. I want to ask you about that too. Now, with your Broadway shows that you did, were they musicals or were they just like plays and whatnot?
This was it was actually with a magic show,
Oh,
and so the thousand show count is between. I mean, that's just sort of over the course of my career. So that is magic and stage illusion. That is music, and then that is also traditional theater roles, musical straight plays, things like that. One of my degrees is in theater, and so that's been a super important part of my life. And the run on Broadway, I was there for the holiday season. In 2016, and we were doing a show called The Illusionist's Turn of the Century. And this was a recreation of the kind of magic show that you would see in like 1903. So big bombastic movement. There were big mustaches and costumes and stuff that was not so technological in terms of the magic, but it was much more traditional. And we were sawing a woman in half. There was a couple from Austria called the Clairvoyants who were doing mind reading out in the theater. We had a world-class juggler named Charlie Fry, who's one of the finest performers I've ever had the pleasure to work with. And it was just this crazy raucous romp through magic and stage illusion, but done in an old-fashioned throwback style. It ended up going on to being the highest grossing magic show in Broadway history.
Wow. Well,
It was a lot of fun.
that's something, yeah. I don't think I've ever been to a magic show that was on Broadway, because the last Broadway show I saw was Cats. That was back in the
Gotcha.
90s, but
Yeah.
yeah, but I've never seen any kind of magic show in especially on Broadway, so that's fun,
Yeah.
But on Broadway though, did that how did that kind of did you take some things from your Broadway career to your musical stage persona?
You know what? Actually, yes. And so
Okay.
the distance in between theater and music has gotten less and less and less and less for me. And even when it comes to punk rock, so when I perform with United Defiance, I actually am in full stage makeup and not like a typical, foundation with eyeshadow just to accentuate, but it's like color and lines are zooming everywhere. And it's because it allows me to throw faces and to look at people and connect with them one on one as I'm playing. I'm not one of those players that does like shoegaze where I'm just like watching my feet, doing my thing. And I'm also not one that looks above the crowd and just sort of zones out. I like to make eye contact with every person who's there. Usually within the first two songs, I jump off the stage and I'm high-fiving everybody during a breakdown where I don't have to actively play a whole bunch.
That's great.
And yeah, there's, I don't know, music at its best, as far as I'm concerned, is telling a story. And a story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's conflict that is resolved. It is essentially theater, and there is a theatrical form to really good songwriting that goes on. And I like to combine those elements together and play, really.
Well, I love that you said that you interact with the fans, because I don't like seeing, guitarists especially look down and see what they're playing around the guitar. Maybe they are looking at their shoes, maybe they're looking at their fingers, I don't know. But I think you know what you're doing, because you're interacting with the crowd, and I love that,
Yeah, well, thank.
and I'm sure that makes it twice as fun for the crowd as with you.
It's interesting because especially these days, and this is, so I'm 43, which is a sobering, strange thing to say out loud because that's almost a half a century old. But I'm old enough to remember before there were cell phones and all that. And actually, there was a difference because now with audiences, and this goes for magic as well, when I'm performing, if I'm at a restaurant or a party, immediately I start and like people's phones come out and I tell them, like, stop for a sec, don't record anything, just exist here in the moment with me, and let's do this so that you have a memory instead of a video that is on a screen. And so when I'm playing a show, people don't know what to do when all of a sudden I'm making very intentional eye contact and singing to them because it's like there's no screen here. If you yell at me in support, I'm going to yell back at
You're
you.
right,
And it's this like, rah, like amazing energy that just flows back and forth, which is really what it is all about.
Which is fair to say, because I love bands that interact with people more, because I've seen Disturbed. I don't really like their live shows because they play just like the record. I don't want to hear that,
Yeah.
I want to hear something else you bring to the table, So yeah, but I'm right away. I'm right there with you, man. I am 45 years old this year. Just
Congrats, we made it this
turned.
far.
We made it. Yes, yeah, 45. This past January. So I guess me and you are doing something right. We're still here living
Absolutely.
on Earth, and
Well,
so.
because getting old beats the alternative of not getting old, and I will take that, any
I don't
day.
know if I want to go back to like my high school years was like the best part of my life, really,
Okay.
because all my friends were still alive, my best friends. I got like so many of my five of my friends are gone, for
Wow.
like natural causes or something happened, so I
Yeah.
wish to God I would go back to my high school days,
Absolutely.
because those were the best years musically. You had Green Day, Pearl Jam,
Oh man.
Nirvana, Metallica. It
You
just ruled,
it's funny. I was watching with my daughter just recently the original Matrix movie, and there's a line in there where Morpheus is narrating, and he says 1999 was the height of human civilization, and in the storyline, and it actually was, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely correct.
Because well, Limp Bizkit came out in 98, right? And that was some good years too, Limp
Yeah.
Bizkit. But okay, so now correct me if I'm wrong, but I read in your bio you recorded your first album in 98, but you've
That's
been
correct.
with Defiance since 2004.
So interestingly enough, you're correct. I recorded my
Okay.
first record when I was 16 years old, so that would have been 98.
Not right.
I had done like demo tapes and things like that beforehand, but our first official record on a CD like went to a real recording studio. We did 17 songs the first day and mixed 17 songs the second day, and then like just nuts. That was a cool, crazy experience, and from there, I just kept going. And United Defiance as a band has been around since 2004. I've been playing with them since 2018. So
Okay.
there've been some lineup changes, and
Yeah.
we've been pretty consistent now over the course of the last, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. But it's a cool group of dudes. And interestingly enough, I live here in Portland, Oregon.
Nice. Okay.
And they're from the San Francisco Bay Area, like East Bay, Oakland, Walnut Creek, Concord, places like that. So I actually don't practice with them. I don't rehearse with them. We're friends, but we're also bandmates, which is a working relationship. And so when it comes time for me to play, I fly to whatever the first city is, or I fly to the Bay Area and get in the van, and then we go. And the first time that we that first show that we play, that's the first time that we are playing all together as a band since the last time we were together. So it's a lot of trust. It's a lot of people showing up, rehearsed, ready to go, and being able to make that happen in real time. And it's a lot of fun, but it's challenging sometimes.
And well, you have two records out right now, and I'm saying, Change the Frequency, which came out in 2001, and you have Safe at Home 2018.
That's right. That's
And I'm
right.
sure before you fly to wherever they are, you practice at home with your recordings, right?
Absolutely.
So I mean, yes, there is a trust, but there is like a okay, I got this because I'm learning at home before I go to the
Oh yeah.
venue.
And it's funny, when I joined the band, so I met them, I was living in Reno, Nevada, and I met them. I was playing for a different band, and we were on the same bill one night, and like we all kind of hit it off. The lead singer Clinton and I, totally were chatting video games and music and fun stuff, and like we just had a fun time. And so, fast forward a couple of years, and they had a my band was over and done with, and they had a record release show for Safe at Home that was coming up. And Clinton reached out to me and said, "Hey, one of our two guitar players can't make it. I know that you're not doing anything right now, like you're not actively playing in a band. Would you be interested in like learning the songs and coming and playing this show with us?" And I was like, "Absolutely, I would. That sounds amazing." And I got one rehearsal with them where I drove from Reno down to the Bay Area. So it's about a 4.5 hour drive. And interestingly enough, they were under the assumption that it was an audition, and I was under the assumption that it was a rehearsal, that I already had the gig. So I showed up, we set everything up together, and then Danny, the drummer, was like, "All right, what would you like to work on?" And I like looked at him and I was like, "What do you mean work on? Like, let's just play the set. Also, I need a microphone because I need to sing." And he was like, you learn the harmonies? And I was like, of course I learned the harmony. Like, that's what the job was, right?
Let's go. Right.
And yeah. So that was super fun.
Yeah. I had a similar experience where he thought I was on his show. I thought I was on his show. Mix up, you know, but everything worked at the end, which I'm certain, you know, which like you did too, you know, everything worked out for you too. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Punk. Let's talk about punk for a minute, you know.
Yeah.
Punk is one of my favorite genres of all time. I have country, rock, and punk as my top three. You know, metal is in there, but not as much as punk, country, and rock, you know. But when I listen to any punk music, it just automatically makes me feel happier, you know, than the state I'm in. And that's so very rare, because country music, you kind of grow into the song and you feel happy in the middle or end. But with punk, right when it starts, it's like, yes, I'm here. I'm, you know, I feel great about myself. And I listened to your song "Cool Kids Club" and "Demons," Demons,
Demons, just an old-fashioned spelling. Okay. Yeah,
nice. That kids, because I thought about that. But instantly I just my adrenaline just shut up. You know, does punk music do that to you, or does a whole different genre, I mean, speak to you like that?
I gotta tell you, man. Yes, the short answer is yes. Punk rock at 43, that beat starts coming in, you know, like this. And I still get wound up and excited like I'm 14 years old. And I, you know, still I'm, you know, I'm not doing a whole lot of jumping in the mosh pit these days. But I still do, because I get going and it just speaks to me on an energetic level that is amazing. In terms of sort of overall genres, I am an eclectic, and I know that like a lot of people say, well, like I kind of listen to everything, I legitimately do. I love punk rock. I love metal. I love rock. I love funk. I play jazz for a good portion of my life, and that is an amazing art form that I am not. I don't want to say I'm not good enough to play, but I definitely did not dedicate my life and go deep the way that most jazz players need to in order to get really good at that art form. Having a musical conversation in real time and doing it artistically is just insane. I was classically trained as a string bass player, and so I love classical music. I love film scores and listen to that all the time by different composers. And I've got a hip-hop I enjoy because I'm also a linguist. And so if you've got good rhyme skill and something to say that is... you know, that is interesting to me. I adore that. And it's an interesting thing. Country has not spoken to me on that same level. And I don't know if that's a West Coast thing.
No, that's not really in it all be all here. But yeah, my mom and dad raised me on country. My sister was too. So that's where country is dead in my heart, you know.
But, so country is part of the soundtrack of your life. And,
yes, very much so. Punk is yours.
Absolutely. And I will say, I recognize Garth Brooks and where he was and is. I recognize Johnny Cash. Amazing stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
And who was it? Was it Brad Paisley? Whiskey Lullaby?
Yeah, Brad Paisley, yeah.
That song makes me cry every time I hear it in a beautiful, emotive sort of a way. So, I'm not saying country sucks and it's the worst. It just does not speak to me on the same level as some others, you know? Mm.
I don't think there really is a genre that's the worst, you know, per se, you know, because all people have their own likes and dislikes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just whatever speaks to you, you know. So.
Yeah, it's an individual thing, and it gets interesting when you get groups of people on a road trip who are all into different stuff, because then it's a question of what can everyone tolerate and who's going to, you know. After a certain point, everyone is so like zonked out from the trip that you can start playing interesting stuff and people will engage because they're a captive audience and they're trapped.
Yeah. Yeah. I was coming home from this long ass concert that we had, you know, And I really, really wanted to sleep. And the friend of mine was playing Nile. I'm not sure if you heard of Nile, but they're like a deathcore.
I know Nile.
Heavy,
yeah.
I was like, please, can I sleep? You know, so they're like, what the hell is wrong with you, man? This is Nile. I'm like, I know this now, but I want to sleep. You know, but I don't know. It's all weird, you know. And I slept through a concert one time mm-hmm. ever. 3 inches of blood, you know, they're not a band anymore, so
yeah.
I didn't give them a shout out, you know, but that's the only one, you know, so
right on.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give you two bands and mm-hmm. and you gotta have to tell me which one you like. I don't want to say more, but which one would you listen to right now?
Yeah, I got you.
We have the Melvins because they're punk, you know, mm-hmm. or the Misfits.
Oh man.
Yeah, okay. It's a hard choice.
So here's what's up.
Okay.
I never got into the Melvins, not because I didn't like them, but just sort of that generation of punk rock spoke to me less because I was classically educated as a musician. So right. having a more musical approach and more virtuosic I just invented a word. Virtuoso playing spoke to me a little bit more. So I never got into the Melvins so much, and the Misfits. I recognize their level and their contributions. I think a lot of their music for me is repetitive. But given the choice between the two, I'm gonna go Misfits.
That's my thing. I just love to miss me to death. You know, I just wanted to ask you that. Yeah, because
United Defiance actually just played a show at 924 Gilman Street, which is like the West Coast version of like CBGB. It's where you know, young Green Day was there. Rancid got their start there. Operation Ivy, all of the. It's like the kind of the punk rock mecca in Berkeley. Yeah. We just played a show with a band called Planet Nine. Plan Nine.
Okay.
And they are the only official Misfits tribute band that is out there, because the dude from the Misfits who owns the rights to the music used to tour with the bass player, and so anyone else who kind of pops up, yeah, immediately the dude sues them, and like that's a no-go. But Plan Nine, they're cool, like they're okay. They've got the bro deal.
I guess since Jerry only, yes, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, because he's the bassist, you know. My next question was going to be what is the most surprising changes you've observed? But then, I guess, this is why you're here. Mm-hmm. You started a company called Fairview.
Fairview, yeah.
Fairview. Mm-hmm. Fairview.io, yeah, for anybody who wants to check it out, you know.
Thank you.
And I resonate with this so much because there seems to be a kind of like a hindrance with Spotify, Apple Music, and everything.
So much that.
For anybody who doesn't, you know what we're talking about right now, Spotify and Apple Music pays their artists like crap, especially Spotify. You know, Apple pays a little bit more, but not enough to make ends meet, you know. And what you're doing is you came up with this Fairview, mm-hmm. allowing artists to get paid more than what they should, right? I'm going to throw it to you and you can...
Yeah, no worries. So, you know, the evolution of the music industry has sort of gone along the lines of like Jurassic Park. We were so curious as to whether or not we could do something when it came to online streaming and downloads and music that we didn't stop to think about whether we should. Mm-hmm. And so the reality for most working musicians these days is that record sales are a thing of the past. They don't really exist anymore because music has become commodified, really. It's disposable. You have access to more music than any human in history on your device if you go onto Spotify, and there is so much that is available, and familiarity breeds contempt. It's just part of the noise now. So we will pay $7 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks, but we cannot spend 99 cents to buy a song from an artist who took 25 years of life to be able to develop the skills and have the experiences and then write the song which could possibly become part of the soundtrack of our lives if it resonates with us. So Fairview, my co-founder, a buddy of mine named Telson, and he and I met in middle school band of all places, and have stayed in touch. He and I put together this company, Fairview, and we are seeking essentially paradigm shift in the music industry. And what we want to do is to build a digital platform for musicians that is optimized for them to be able to find new revenue streams that to make up for that lack of record sales now. So here's how we're going to do it, right? We have live streaming, which is a thing. We are not inventing that, but we are going to be combining a couple of different services that every musician is using, but they all have different accounts everywhere, and there are issues with compatibility. And we want to centralize everything into one place. So we would like to essentially take out the middleman and have a platform where if you've got a band, you can be a member of our site, and you open up your computer, you hit the go button, point a camera at your band, and you're playing a show anyway, so it's not like it's extra work. Right. And that you as a band can sell virtual tickets to that live stream of you doing that show. And that ticket price is going to go directly to you as the band, as opposed to a third party, which is going to drive up the cost like Ticketmaster does, you know, with a whole bunch of different fee processing fees and convenience fees and all of that. And so that money would go directly to you. So that now becomes just a question of what is your music worth to your fan base. It's you as the band and your fans. And so it's going to create more meaningful connections with them. And it's going to make music more into a humanized sort of an art form than where it is headed, which is very faceless, very mass produced music. You know, Rick Beato talks all the time on his channel about music is becoming more homogenized, and it's because algorithms are optimizing, here's what you're listening to, and we're going to feed you more of what you have been listening to, so that the diversity is just going down. On our platform, and I should mention, we've not built it yet. We are in the fundraising stage of this. We absolutely can use any help that we can get. And in fact, if any of your listeners would like to go to our website, fairvu.net or .io, either one will take you there.
I'll put it in the description for sure.
Thank you. We have an online store, and we are selling a couple of digital products. The entire price of that goes directly to help build this platform. So we're going to do live streaming for bands. There's going to be on the platform a space for media on demand to be able to store your stuff in videos and past concerts. And then there's going to be an e-commerce storefront for you to be able to sell merch. And for that, bands are going, you know, it'll be a subscription service, but not expensive, something that actual bands can afford.
Yeah, exactly.
And we will take a small percentage of every ticket sale and merch thing. Yeah. But we're talking like
3 to 5%. We all make money, you know, even the fan. Well, I guess us fans give the band money, but then again, we get like joy from them playing for us, you know. So we all win. You know?
So check this out. If when you go to see a show, if you were to come see a United Defiance show and you liked us, and so you decided to buy a T-shirt, the price of that T-shirt is directly supporting us. And it is equivalent to you listening to the same song of ours on Spotify about 5,000 times.
That was my next question. Is physical merchandise still being outsold by the actual digital song? And I guess it's yes.
So Spotify currently, when Telson and I founded Fairview, which was just recently, we incorporated as a benefit corporation last November. I pulled the numbers for United Defiance because I was curious to see exactly what was going on. And so United Defiance has been on Spotify since 2018. And our songs in between then and December 31st of last year, 2024, so that 6-year period, we've had our songs streamed, give or take, about 175,000 times and change, a little bit more than that. For that entire period of time, and for 175,000 listens to our music, we've been paid $388. Not every year, not each.
That's total.
So that is 0.0023 cents per stream. That is 1/2000th of a penny per listen. And that listen has to be over 30 seconds long. Otherwise, it doesn't count. And also, artists do not start to monetize. They will not receive any money if that song has not been listened to at least 1,000 times. So you are, when you start with Spotify as an artist, you have to earn for them and have people listen to you 1,000 times per song before you start seeing any revenue back to that. And the reality of it is, good luck being a musician in 2025 and not being on Spotify, because that is how people consume and listen to music now. So there's it's a little bleak when it comes to sort of looking at what the reality is, and yet there's so many bands and musicians and artists out there who are still doing this because this is what we do. This is what we have to do. We feel compelled. We're passionate about what we are, and we're passionate about the connection that our art makes with fans, with people who listen to our music. And I have absolutely had people talk to me about my music, about United Defiance songs, about stuff that I have lended my musical abilities to different records and bands and such. And it is a deeply fulfilling, amazing thing to have somebody be like, you know what, that song really touched me. That song really helped me through a rough time. That song really made me remember something that happened to me before that was very sweet, and every time I listen to it, it brings me to a different level. And what we are trying to do at Fairview is to take that feeling and to be able to amplify it in between a band and their fans, and to have the band be able to focus on doing more of that. Making a living, being able to pay their bills with their music, as opposed to having another job or two or three or five, or doing gig work, or having to, go and pull a double shift and then request time off to go on tour, and that's your vacation, because that's the
Yeah,
reality
that's
of it,
it.
you know?
Yeah, because it's funny since it's funny too, because I saw my friend had a band years ago, and their band was called Yes, We Have Day Jobs. I'm like, that's your band's name. I'm like, whoa, dude, that's so great, But that band's broken up by years, so. But I think that, yeah. But so I guess, okay. So we have a problem that we have to get over, and the solution is what you're going to do. I shouldn't say try, because you're going to do this for sure.
We're working on
And
it, yeah.
right, yeah. So. But in the meantime, when you get from now till you get your site up and running, what can people do like me to I guess enable bands to get paid more? I
That
mean,
is,
yes, that is the question, right? What?
yeah.
Yeah.
No,
Because
amazing question.
I figured that if we all stop listening to Spotify, they have no choice but to, but then again, who's gonna all how are we gonna get all of us to stop listening,
So we are currently working on a comprehensive list of different sites and streaming platforms and such that are compensating bands the way that they should, and that is closer to a working model. That's going to be forthcoming in some of our content. Absolutely come and check us out on all of the social places. We're on Facebook and Instagram and all of that stuff. But what you can do as a listener, if you love a band, first and foremost, if they are playing in your area or you're able to go and see them somewhere, absolutely go and do that live, and then buy some of their merchandise in person. Start a relationship with them. Join their mailing list. You don't even have to have money to be able to listen to their stuff somewhere. Most bands have got what's called a band camp,
Yes,
and that is a you
yes,
know that's a
yes.
platform which allows them to be able to monetize their stuff, and that usually goes right to them. I know United Defiance has one, and you can buy
Oh,
records, you can
nice.
buy
Okay.
individual songs, but you can support them. You can share out their stuff. If you like a song, if you like a video that they've done, put it out on your social media and tell people, hey, discover this band. This is amazing. Put them on playlists. Share what they're up to with everyone, and that's super helpful. Go and see them live, and you can absolutely, yes, you can listen to them on Spotify. I'm not telling you to not do that at this particular point, because That is going to help them in the long run. If, you know, booking agents and promoters look at how many monthly listeners are there, how many times have their songs been played and all of that. So it's not enough to just be like, well, this sucks and we're not going to do it. Right. We have to have a plan and approach it in a particular way. But go out of your way to see what they are up to and go check out their website and see what you can do. Reach out to them. Most bands are super, super jazzed and like to talk to you and are just like, wait, you're listening to my music? That's right. Amazing. Oh, great. Thank you so much. Great.
But I don't like Spotify, so I never listen to anything on Spotify. Now, Apple Music, yes, because they pay a little bit more and it's easier for me to use. That's it, you know. I've never liked Spotify ever since I heard they pay them like crap. I don't like Spotify, you know.
Yep.
And I try to deter everybody else off of Spotify. You know, there's Tidal, there's Amazon Music, there's Apple Music, there's a whole lot of different routes you can go except for Spotify. But Spotify seems to be the most well known right now. You know, I'm not sure why that is.
It's definitely the biggest, and interestingly enough, Spotify came out of Napster directly. Started and people began downloading songs down, I remember that Metallica had a huge problem with that, and that started a whole thing. As soon as Napster was ordered to cease and desist, Kazaa and then LimeWire immediately replaced them, and the CEO of Spotify,
file sharing.
And the CEO of Spotify, who was a pro, he's a tech guy, he's a programmer, he's not a musician, he's never been in a band, he's never written a song, to my knowledge. He looked at the market and said, well, okay, Napster was taken down, immediately stuff was replaced. When those get taken down, immediately stuff is going to get replaced. So there's demand here. Let me build something that is going to be able to have all of the music. And how is he doing it? Well, he's doing it by exploiting the musicians that are a part of it and not paying that. There's a pretty amazing song, a video on our website, actually. You can go and check it out. And it describes how musicians get paid on Spotify, and it's there are only the top 13% of musicians in the world. There's something like 6 or 7 million songs on that platform, and only the top 13% of them are making money. The rest of them all have less than 1,000 views and are not seeing anything.
Right.
And of the ones that are monetized, it's just the very, very tip of the pyramid there that is making anything that is substantial. And you know, as you grow as a musician in your career and as you grow in popularity and you're doing bigger and bigger shows, well, those shows cost more and more to do, and so things start to get proportional. And you know, Snoop Dogg famously a couple days ago, five days ago, announced he's pulling his entire catalog from Spotify because he had 1 billion views, like Carl Sagan with a B.
And he got paid 100 and something.
He got paid $45,000 for 1 billion views.
Yeah, that's not nearly enough, dude. I mean, that's
it's insane.
Dog. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
good,
so
good for him. You know, great to go. So,
the time has come for musicians to be able to have their contributions to society recognized for what it is, because music is such a fundamentally deep part of everybody's life. You can play a song, close your eyes, and immediately you are back in that time of your life experiencing those emotions again, which is essentially magic as far as I'm concerned.
There you go, right?
Pretty powerful,
all,
you know?
It all comes back, right? The full circle, yeah. So,
yeah.
Here's another thing I want to talk to you before we go.
Sure.
So I encourage everybody to go to fairview.io, that's fairvu.io.
Thank you.
And go to the problem. There's a tab that says the problem. And go down a little bit, and I want you all to watch Greed Killed My Music Venue. Now, I watched this video, and it's not just the musicians getting effed, you know, politely. Yep. It's the venues also, because I didn't know how much the venues were getting effed on before I watched this. And, oh my God, they're taking Bastard and Live Nation just needs to be, I don't know. You know.
It is a monopoly.
Right. That's the word. Yeah.
You know, it is not illegal in this country to be a monopoly, but it is illegal to engage in monopolistic practices, and they absolutely are doing so. Yeah. So it's.
I don't know how to get away with it. You know. I guess.
Well,
I guess when he talks to, you know, politicians now, you know,
it's,
so I don't
it,
know.
It's that, and it's going to take musicians decide, and in conjunction, you know, we are all, Fairview's message is we are all stronger together. Yeah. And it's going to take musicians with venues coming together and being like, you know what, we are not going to be partnering with you. We're going to take the hit. Maybe we don't sell a gajillion tickets. We sell this much, but these people are going to keep coming. And that's part of what Fairview is hoping to build, is when we have a platform that is able to live stream with good quality the bands that you love, all of a sudden venue capacity goes away, geographic location goes away. Your fans in Salt Lake City can watch you play in Albany, New York, and it's going to be in real time. And it's really just going to take bands realizing their fans want to see them and want to support them directly. Yeah. And the music industry is really lacking the music part that makes it the music right. industry. Yeah. It is, you know, it is not the the corporate executive industry, except it is right now. Mm. So we're taking it back.
What I really like about your the thing that you're making with this streaming music live is you get to talk to your, depending on who is doing what, you get to talk to the band members after they play sometimes, you know, if mm-hmm. they wanted to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm always wanting to meet musicians after the show when, you know, they're all tired or whatever, you know. But with this, I figured this, it would be more intimate with fans, and you could talk to them, like, you know, periodically, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that you could do, go over to our YouTube channel mm-hmm. and have a look at some of our videos. We do a series called An Interview. That is with a VU. Right. An interview yeah. where we are chatting with musicians and bands from sort of around the country as I travel around and do stuff. And we get to talk to them. It's not your typical questions of, you know, okay, where'd you grow up? What are your influences? Yeah. What do you play? What do you do this? And it really is more a question about music. Where did you come from as a musician? Like, what is your backstory? What do you love about the music world? What do you dislike about it? And then talk to us about the soundtrack of your life. And it's really about connecting everybody together through music as the medium. So we've got some cool videos over there, and more, much, much, much more to come.
Yeah, nice, nice. Well, thank you for coming on. And I'm going to have three more questions before we go on. Yeah. I understand we have like 20 minutes or something.
I'm not in any rush. I got,
okay,
you got
good.
Me.
Yeah. All right, good. So I think this is going to be really fun for you because you've done this before. If you could perform any song from the punk genre as a theatrical piece, what song would you choose and how would you visualize it on stage?
Oh, that is an incredible question. Okay. Any song from the punk genre
as a theatrical
yeah. piece. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to say that I would, well, okay.
Did I stop you? Okay.
No, you didn't stop me.
Oh, okay.
We're going to shoot for the moon on this one and why not just go full thing. So, probably my favorite punk rock song is a song by NoFX called The Decline. And it is it actually came out as an EP. The song itself is like 17 and a half minutes long.
Wow.
It takes you through this journey. It came out in 1999, I think, 98, 99. Yeah. And is as relevant today as it was when it came out. And so I would love to stage that on a stage, but with a bunch of different projection screens that are surrounding the action so that we could do a bunch of projection mapping for what's going on. And the song itself talks about the decline of everything, of society, of relationships, of business and commerce, of the political situation, all of that stuff.
Basically
life. Right? But it does it in a bunch of different vignettes and sections of the song. Fat Mike said in an interview once that he was influenced by the Subhumans from the Cradle to the Grave, and this was sort of his version of that. And so I would love to be able to stage the vignettes so that there is, you know, particular ones happening on sections of the stage, but augmented with projections to be able to move you into any place, any setting that's going on. I'll give you a super quick example.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, I would, definitely for you and your listeners, anyone who's curious, go and check out The Decline by NOFX. But at 4 minutes and 20 seconds into that song, they start singing about Jerry spent some time in Michigan, a 20-year vacation after only had a dime. And so it's about this dude named Jerry who, because he's in Michigan, he got caught with a small amount of marijuana. And because this was back in the 90s, he went down for 20 years.
Yeah.
And as things move on, it's a pretty bleak, kind of a rough thing. They say he only stayed for a couple of months. And then he ended up killing himself because that was a better alternative than spending 20 years being abused and assaulted in prison for something that is, according to the lyrics in their song, in California, it's a $20 fine. And now, of course, everything is legal, so many places and how things have changed, and at the same time, how things have not. So it would not be a super happy piece.
No,
it would be bleak and it would be meaningful, but I think it would be a really interesting thing to see staged. And interestingly enough, I know that Fat Mike from NOFX came up with a musical that he did, Home Street Home,
nice.
That I think would probably be similar in vision and scope. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe he'll end up doing that.
I would love to see if he ever did that. I would be front row seat, you know, watching you do that too.
Yeah, no, check it out.
I'd be amazing to do, yeah. So, okay, second question.
Yeah.
Let's go with 13 to 14 to 15 year old Sasha way back when.
Okay? Oh, yeah, okay.
We're sitting in your room looking around your walls. Okay, what musical posters are we seeing, or if we are seeing any musical posters? Oh.
Okay, cool question, actually. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Couple of them. I've got over on this wall here, I've got posters for Screeching Weasel,
okay,
which was a band out of Chicago, for Guttermouth, which was from California. I've got for the Subhumans, which I mentioned, and of course for NOFX, and for Lagwagon, which was a punk rock band out of Goleta, California, so Santa Barbara area, which were some of my all-time favorites. And over on that wall over there, ooh, right. See my camera ooh, just yeah. did a thing. That was cool. I actually, it was a bunch of artwork that I did. I went to the local video store back when there used to be video stores, and they gave me a bunch of posters for movies that they were no longer showing it.
Yeah.
And I turned them around to the white side and plastered the entire wall, and then I took Sharpies and drew a whole bunch of crazy stuff all over it that was just going on in my life at the time. So it was like the musical influences were over here, and then I was illustrating sort of the stories of the songs, interestingly enough, that you just talked about as a theatrical piece. And so, nice. But like more than stick figures, but less than, Rembrandt, somewhere in between the two.
I love that. Two more questions for you.
Yeah.
Okay, now it this does not have to be necessarily punk, okay?
Sure.
Who are your four favorite artists or bands? Because you have like a, we're going to do like a Mount Rushmore, you know, you got four
bands. Oh, yeah. Band.
Yeah. Now this is all genres, you know, it doesn't have to be punk. I mean, it can, but if you want to, you know, dive, you know, go out of your element and just pick your four favorite artists or bands, who would it be?
Okay, super, super difficult question. I'll give you the first one. Probably my all-time favorite artist ever, actually is Rammstein, from Germany.
I love it. Yes, they're so great. Yeah.
I took a single semester of German when I was at university, and then the rest of the German that I speak, and I'm certainly not fluent, but I am conversational enough to be able to, you know, drop me in Berlin, and I can get a hotel room, I can order dinner, I can buy tickets, I can do the thing, I can make some jokes, and that's all cool. Could not discuss philosophy or medicine with you or anything like that, but enough. And the vast majority of that is because of Rammstein and me sitting down with their lyrics and trying to figure everything out. So they're definitely number one. I think probably number two would be a band called Camelot with a K.
I've heard of them. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. They sort of were my entrance into the Euro metal style big symphonic progressive stuff. Amazing vocals, amazing melodies, virtuoso guitar and keyboards, and just awesome. And I saw them 17 years ago when they were touring for a record called The Black Halo. And I just recently got to take my son to see them, who he loves them
Nice.
now as well.
Yeah,
And
all
it was
right,
this
I love
real
that.
awesome, cool experience
Yeah,
for
I love
that.
that.
So that's going to be two. I think probably three would be, oh man. I'm going to have to put Danny Elfman up on there, and specifically with his, I mean, he had his Oingo Boingo stuff and he has his solo stuff that he's doing now, but he has played such a huge role in my life as a composer, and
Yes.
has scored so
I
many
mean,
movies that
like
resonate with me. And
Batman and Nightmare Before Christmas. I mean, just
yeah,
amazing,
Sleepy Hollow, and you know,
yeah.
Edward Scissorhands, that the ice dance specifically in that one, that plays almost on loop whenever I see snow falling. So I think Danny Elfman is up in position number three for that. And
Great pick.
I think for number four, it's probably oh man, it's probably going to be from the punk rock world. It's probably going to be NOFX. They just
Yeah,
all of their music was, you know, I played bass for 20 years before picking up a guitar. It
fair.
was because of them. They were the first, you know, Punk and Drublic, my buddy Morgan, you know, when we were 11 years old or 12 years old, gave me Punk and Drublic for my birthday and was like, you need to listen to this. And it changed absolutely
Everything for
everything.
yeah,
You
nice.
know, and there's a bunch of them that I could have said that I feel bad not saying that, but I think probably if we're going for just impact, it's going to be those. So, Rammstein, Camelot with a K,
Danny
Danny
Elfman.
Elfman, and NOFX.
I don't think I'm going to argue with that one because you have four great artists, you know. But I do have a question. Okay, so Rammstein's been around since 94, 3, maybe.
long time, long time.
How have they like kept their cool with all? Because like no members left, no members changed, you know. It's
You
all
know,
the same, you know,
it's
which
yeah,
is
they've not had
rare
any
because
lineup shifts. Super
you
rare.
never you never find it. That's unheard of now, you know.
So in reading a bunch of interviews with them and how they approach things, I mean, the reason why they're my favorite artist of all time is because they have a unified artistic vision of what they're doing. And they actually run Rammstein as a legit democracy, that they do not make a move unless everyone unanimously decides that they are going to do that. There was a gap of like 8 years, nine years in between records. Liebe ist für alle da came out in like 2008, and then it wasn't until what 2020 or 20 or 2019
Something,
when their the one with the match, the self-titled one, came out.
Let
And
me look it up.
it was because all of the members were not on board. Some were burnt out, some had other things and other projects they were doing and stuff they were focusing on. And so it's like, unless everyone is behind it 100%, we're not going to do it. And I respect the hell out of that. That's pretty incredible.
That's some, yeah.
If you have not checked out their music videos, or if your listeners have not, do yourself a favor, block out some time and go through and watch their music videos, because every single one.
They're great. I've always wanted to see them live, and I don't think they're
Yeah.
coming to America because I've heard they were banned for shooting fart over the fans. But that was
It's.
like 30, 40 years or something, right? 30 years ago, yeah. So you know. I don't know.
It is much more difficult right now to tour if you're a European band to come to America, and vice versa for us to go to Europe because of visa cost. I mean, everything post-COVID has gotten way, way, way more expensive in the music world.
Oh, yeah.
And so that is also another, you know, when you can go and see a band live to support them, absolutely
Do
do so,
it.
because
Do
they
it.
are paying to be out there and to play. So yeah, but man, Rammstein's their videos are like short films, and you know, just beautiful
They're
pieces
awesome.
of art.
Okay, so just to you were correct. It's 10 years between the album that you said I can't pronounce it, you know,
Liebe ist für alle da. Love is there for everyone.
and the next album was Rammstein, which came out in 2019. So there is a gap. There's a 10 year gap. Yeah, but I didn't know that they like have to sign off like everything. That's great. You know, that's what bands should be like. You know, but then
According to
again, you know.
According to one of their interviews, actually, their keyboard player, Flaka, has actually not yet officially joined the band. He never told the band, like, yes, I will be the keyboard player. And you know, he's been with them this whole time, obviously. So he is, and he's a huge reason of what makes them stylistically interesting and
It is,
different,
yeah.
because it's
So
not just
really,
industrial. He adds stuff, but yeah,
he just shows up and like, hey guys, I'm ready to depart.
yeah.
Let's do it. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, because I also love the chemistry between the two guitarists. I forget, but Richard and Tim.
And Paul.
Paul, thank you. Yeah, I mean their chemistry and they're in harmony like so tight, you know. That's
Their
amazing, you know.
music sounds like an industrial factory so much of the
It does,
time,
yeah.
and they will do this thing that I just adore, where one guitar player will be playing something and the other one will play exactly the same thing but an
And hair,
octave up.
yes,
Yeah.
and it's
And
great.
it creates this thing. And I had a buddy of mine who was super into recording, who he went to recording school and learned that Rammstein pioneered a technique where part of how their bass drum sounds is whenever the bass drum hits, they went in and programmed using computers with automation a drop in the level of the music so that you can hear that bass drum. And we're talking, it's like a
Oh.
fraction of a fraction of a millisecond,
Yeah, but
but
that, yeah.
it's enough that
It's enough
it
that makes sense.
helps to
Sorry.
create their sound.
Yeah,
Yeah.
hell yeah. I did not know that. Yeah, so thank
Pretty
you.
cool.
So, okay. So one more final question, and
Lay it on me.
this is the hardest question
Oh no.
today. Oh no. Okay.
We've had some hard ones. All right,
I
what's
know,
up?
right? Yeah, but this is gonna be easier for you, maybe because you're very good at this.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. So, what artist, album, or song that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your wife, your children, or your friends how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Okay. So what artist, album, and song?
Or you can
Or
just like,
song?
or yeah. It
Okay.
doesn't have to be all three. It can be just one.
What is resonating with me on such a deep level that I would be unable to articulate it to everybody else, right?
Yes.
That,
Yes, sir.
okay, I got you. That's a very difficult question. Okay.
That's why it's end all and be all, you know?
Okay. I think I'm okay. Here's what's up.
Okay.
And this I'm going to give you two answers for this because one of them, it's not a cop out, but it's not something that would be accessible to almost anyone. I had a very close good friend of mine, who he was part of the soundtrack of my life. We played in bands together. He was the guitarist for my band in high school growing up. We played for the rest of his life, and he ended up dying in 2018. And we had a project together called Fatal Contraption, and it was the two of us. And half of those songs will never be played ever again,
Ever right, yeah.
because I have no idea how he did what he did. He was such an amazing, talented, but like he put in his 10,000 hours as a musician to develop his style, and that's just gone. I've never met anyone who can play like him before, and so I can listen to those old recordings that are him and me, and we've programmed drums, and we've gone through and overdubbed all of the backup vocals and everything. And his lyrics were beautiful and profound, and oftentimes sad. He died of a spider bite, actually, which, what a way to go out on Halloween, nonetheless.
Oh, jeez.
But
That's
so
hard. Yeah.
that's gonna be my that was his favorite holiday, so that
Oh, wait,
he that was like perfect for him. But I cannot articulate the depth of emotion and feeling that I get when I hear his voice and my voice together and doing what we used to do. That is a magical, beautiful time in my life that won't ever come back, and I miss it, but it's special. Something that your listeners can actually go and check out.
Sure.
Let's I think I'm going to say I think I'm gonna say It's Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd.
The whole album.
The whole thing, start to finish.
Okay.
That record just did something to me when I was a kid growing up. I've listened to it throughout my life in different points in my life, in different contexts. And there is the melodies, and even more than the melodies and the lyrics, it's how it makes me feel. There is a feeling that goes along with listening to that. And I, still, once a year, twice a year, I will...
You got to put it on, get, right?
And not just put it on, but I will get into headphones, I will turn all the lights off and lay on the floor and just let myself zone to it and have it take me. And that is, you know, I can put on the record for my kids or my friends. You could play a song. You hear stuff on the radio. You hear Money. You hear the Great Gig in the Sky or Time or whatever it is. But, like, that record just has something to it where the planets aligned and it speaks to my soul on a level that I can't describe. So that's the one.
I know that Roger Waters, is that his name?
Yeah.
He did a redux of Dark Side, but I'm not sure if that's, I don't know. I never really listened to it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware, but I'll definitely go and check it out and see what the...
Okay, so he said this was the way it's supposed to be played, but I'm like, I don't know what that's, that's kind of your, you know. And I was like, it doesn't upset me, but it's like you're really talking out of your butt because why wasn't it recorded like the way why did it record it back then instead of you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago? And it's like, wait, come on now, you know?
And with that level of success and notoriety as a record, like what, so it makes me interested to hear it and compare the two, but that's that's a little bit like George Lucas going back and re-releasing Star Wars with a whole bunch of CGI stuff put in and like in the original. It's
I still can't stand that.
Leave it alone. Just leave it alone.
Exactly. Well, Sasha, we do honestly love you here at Windward Sail, and we honestly beg you to come back. And thank you so much for geeking out with me over Rammstein.
Dude, my pleasure.
I just love Rammstein to death, dude. Yeah,
this was great. I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. If anyone is interested in having a look at what Fairview is up to, please go and have a look at our website. Check out our YouTube videos. We are fundraising currently. We are focused on building a platform for musicians that is hopefully going to change how things go and bring all of the artists up together. So strong.
And you're on Instagram too at fair.vu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're not on TikTok yet, or we're not doing the TikTok thing. I still don't understand TikTok. I'm still learning it after all these years. So I mean,
I am figuring it out.
just like me.
Part of my plan is because of the whole TikTok thing and being able to not download it, and then you could, and then like I'm having glitches in trying to sign up. What my vision is for Fairview to get on TikTok, and then I would love to connect with like three young bands a week who are just looking to build their audience, and I would like to give them a shout out and feature their music and then interview them and do the thing. And you know, kids are ride or die when it comes to music. And It always makes me, whenever United Defiance plays an all ages show, it makes me smile to know that music is continuing on. With all of the music industry stuff that's happening, that aside, like the core of getting a bunch of kids together who love what they're doing and they're going to just play and play the hell out of this music that's coming out of their heart, like that's the best. Right. So TikTok will be coming soon for sure.
Nice. Okay, so everybody, once again, that's www.fairview.io, not .com, .io, which is great, you know. So, all right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, man, thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on. And with that said, everybody, thank you for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.